As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Going to talk some Cubs here at the 1 week out mark from opening day. Cubs open in 7 days. And I joked on Twitter this morning, but I'm going to tell you guys, it's totally not a joke, that I will absolutely treat opening day as a referendum on the entire season. If the Cubs win, if the Cubs lose, of course, it's just one of 162 games. Chill out, man. It's not a big deal. I realize I do that every year. And I say that not that I talk about it that way every year. I do that to myself every year. That is what being a Cubs fan has been for the last, 30 odd years for me.
Honestly, I struggle, and I've said this to a couple players over the past couple days. I'm struggling to not overthink spring stats, and I can't remember if I do this every spring, if it's the first, maybe it's the first normal spring in a while, and I'm just like stop looking at those numbers, why am I overthinking this? And then I definitely did it last year, the opening weekend. They opened with the Brewers last year, right? And it was three awesome pitchers, and they looked, and the offense just looked really good against three awesome pitchers. Yeah. And I was like, That's really interesting. What's going on here? And obviously that offense was, generally bad, average to bad. But that first weekend, I mean, Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, and they're taking great at bats and looked great. So as much as I try not to, it's hard not to overreact to small samples or spring training. I think the biggest thing for me is I'm focusing more on stuff and just little things with at bats. And there are things that are like, oh, that's really good. Or, oh dear, that doesn't look right. So it's less about results and focusing more on like, oh geez, Keegan Thompson is sitting 91 miles per hour and only throwing an inning every outing. That's not good. And we'll get more Keegan Thompson information today. So let's see how that goes. But yeah, I think there's stuff to be taken away from it. We discussed this before, right? Like you care about it you don't care about it until you do, as far as the spring training numbers go. But there is good information to be had from here. I think it's just, you don't want to overdo the, ooh, look at Trey Mancini's batting average type stuff.
Sadev and I were messaging on Slack earlier today, and I just realized how fluid things are and like how much things can change in a week. Like we were on planes going in opposite directions, and like before I left, I'd ask Ross a question, like a general roster thing, not at all about like the shortstop or the guys who already said, he's like, well, you know, I don't care if Dansby Swanson only gets one hit all spring. And I was like, wait, what? And then I looked it up, he only had one. And then a couple of days later, I was able to sit down with Swanson for a project. And we talked for about 20, 25 minutes. And it was getting towards the end. And I was like, I don't want to like ask him like my first extended conversation with him, be like, man, you're not hitting well in spring training, and look like a total like buffoon covering my first spring training. But now a week later, I was like, that quote of him dismissing the question would really come in handy right about now.
Yeah, it's funny. Swanson has become the avatar for whatever you want spring training to be or not be. You know, new guy coming in, big contract, very important for the Cubs this year. And you could look at his spring results and make it about, well, you know, I'm not really looking at his numbers. I'm just looking at, you know, how he looks at the plate. And, you know, he's taking good swings. His timing is just clearly off. That's why he's swinging through hittable strikes. So it's fine. Or you could say, yeah, but, you know, strikeout rate's in the 35%+ range, and that stabilizes pretty quickly. And that's the one big concern with him. Even in a good year last year, the strikeout rate continued to climb. You know, you can take the numbers in spring training in any direction you want, really, ultimately. And mostly that's a product of the small sample, because we run into this in season all the time, right? We take a 2-week stretch from someone and we allow ourselves to, I'll give the three of us credit. We would never build a narrative around 2 weeks worth of stats in the regular season, or seek out 2 weeks worth of stats to match a narrative that we had pre-existing in our heads. We would never do such a thing. But if you wanted to in spring training, you could do it, because it's such a small sample and because the guys they're facing are not going to be in the big leagues and all of these things. And so I'm actually glad you mentioned Swanson in that respect, because I suspect his spring training numbers are going to become a story only in retrospect. You know, if he starts out fine, it'll be, see, spring training never means anything. Da, 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 da. But if he starts out slow, which historically he has, I don't know if there's any signal there, but he has every April is kind of pretty rough for him in his career, including the strikeout rate. And so I don't know if he just takes a little while to get his timing right, which would make some sense. I think if that happens, you know, we'd look back and say, oh boy, that spring training stuff was a harbinger of his struggles. And so, anyway, that is all to say, I'm with you guys on trying not to do too much with the numbers. I haven't even looked at the numbers much, to be honest with you.
I'll say one thing about Swanson. He hasn't pulled a ball hard all spring. His two hits, or his last hit, was an opposite field double. So his timing is clearly off. Like, that's clearly the issue. So don't look at the numbers as much as, where is he hitting the ball when he is making contact? There's been no pull, nothing pulled hard. So he's off. He's clearly fighting it, which is great. Fight it in spring training. This like what you just said is right. We're going to build some sort of narrative off this. My only concern, and this it has less to do with oh no, he's struggling in spring or whatever, and more to do with, he's a big money free agent. If he does get off to that really slow start, that mentally that's going to wear on him. And he's, you just don't want him to press. And like, this is, it's very normal for that to happen, where a guy gets off to a slow start. The fans are like, what's going on? The media is like, what's going on? The guy's getting questions about it and he starts to overthink it. So you hope if that does happen, he doesn't press, he doesn't overthink it, and he just lets it be. And he finds his rhythm, but those are the types of things that can snowball. It hasn't happened yet, so I'm not like saying panic, Cubs fans. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. April isn't here yet. We don't know how he's going to look. I'm just saying I'm going to be watching it. A slow start for a big money free agent is just, it happens, and it can really screw up that first year for that free agent. I think John Lester is a good example of someone that got out of it, right? Found his rhythm after looking like a mess on a big money deal with a ton of expectations. And people were certainly getting on him. I remember that at the time, right? There was a lot of like, this guy is mentally screwed up because of the first base stuff, right? Throwing to first base. So we've seen it, and there are people that totally overthink it. And John Lester is arguably the greatest free agent signing in Chicago sports history, right? So we need to be careful if there is like a rough April here, even a rough April. Forget this rough March, a rough April for Dansby Swanson, and before writing off his entire Cubs career, which I'm sure people are going to do anyways if he struggles for a week or two.
I mean, the Cubs would never sign a player, an outstanding defensive player from the Braves, betting on a mid-career offensive surge and handing him a contract so far beyond what he ever could have imagined because he was under the age of 30, right? I mean, that would like never happen.
So what you're saying, Mooney, is we just need to make sure that Dansby doesn't suffer a wrist injury in the first month, and then it's all,
I think Dansby Swanson, I'm with you, Sadam. That's totally going to happen. Like, we are going, like, we'll be taking turns writing that story. It'll be like, okay, one week in, you write it, and then, like, you know, after the next road trip, like, I'll write it. Like, that's totally going to happen. I do think by the end of the year, he'll probably be in a fine place, and that his defense will carry, and that he's a pretty confident, intelligent individual that I think, you know, can work through it. I just think the bigger thing is, like, when we talk about pitching development, like, what if there's no there? Like, the Cubs loaded up on defense, but what if the pitching isn't there? And, like, Brett, I was looking at one of your tweets last night of, you know, the Cubs were so good at pitching development that obscured how good they are at hitter development. And there was this, like, I don't know, Disney Pixar photo of a character very proud of himself. I'm not doing a good job describing it on the podcast.
The intent was to offer up an opinion that, you know, is extreme could get you some feedback.
John Greenberg jumped all over it. I got a kick out of that. But I feel like if Keegan Thompson's throwing 91 miles an hour and Justin Steele says it feels like I'm pitching underwater and Brandon Hughes has a knee injury that, I don't know, Saad, if you're down there, but when I read the tweets, I'm like, oh, this guy's definitely starting the season on the injured list. Like, there's no way they're going to rush that. It seems like a pretty convenient excuse or way to stash him at Iowa and just give him time to ramp up. But, like, I don't know. I'm not really just sold on the pitching side yet. I still think there's just a lot that has to happen and has to continue happening. And I think part of the danger, or like, this is just kind of the reality check that everyone needs to have before the season starts, of like, the Cubs don't have much figured out on the pitching side. Like, there are interesting ideas and interesting prospects and more velocity, and Javier Assad looked great in the WBC, but like, let's see it, you know? Like, I may have missed someone, but like, since I think 2014 was the last time the Cubs signed an arbitration eligible homegrown pitcher to a contract. And that to me shows getting a guy through your system and having at least 2+ years in the major league and saying, okay, we want to, let's just guarantee this guy's contract 20% of it at least before opening day. And like, until maybe Alzolay is awesome out of the bullpen this year, he's looked very good. I'll give Steele the benefit of the doubt. And Thompson and Hughes were really good last year. There's nothing taking anything away from that. But like, Cubs have a lot to prove this year. And I think we sometimes can be lulled into a false sense of security when we see these spring training velo numbers or hear about how they talk about it when they actually have to show it this year, big time.
You know, I'm going to take that I'm going to half agree and half disagree with you there, but I think we'll end up in the same place, because I think where the Cubs do deserve credit for, in my view, having shown, yes, they can do it, is, you know, the guys you're mentioning, for example, they did perform last year. They did rise up from being not top prospects to being very good big league performers for a season, at least. And we've seen that many times now, mostly in the bullpen. But I think we've seen that there is an ability to put guys in a position to succeed at the big league level, guys whose either career trajectory in the minors or experience in other organizations perhaps did not suggest that they could be as good as they were with the Cubs for a given season. Where I'll agree with you is I think, and I'm guilty of this all the time, and I really was this offseason with those three guys in particular. I'm glad you mentioned Keegan Thompson, Brandon Hughes, and Justin Steele. What I and a lot of Cubs fans are guilty of is having seen them perform so well last season, you kind of go through the offseason with this mindset of, okay, they've got those three guys. You know, they're going to work around and you know, what's going to happen with Hayden Wisniewski and, oh, what's going to happen with this guy? But don't, you know, these three guys are set. They've developed these three guys and they are set. And it's like, I excuse Cubs fans for feeling that way because we haven't been in this place in a very long time where you're seeing the organization develop a lot of pitchers. But here's the reality. When you look in on other organizations, one season or a half season of good work at the big league level for a guy who's just come up, that's not enough to say, oh, he's set, he's in place. You know, like even Justin Steele, for whom it's more than a season, it's, you know, periodic stretches over multiple years, but like it is a mistake to assume that just because he looked so good for the stretch that he had last year where he did look so good, he was getting results and he was pitching well enough to justify those results, in my view. You can't go into the next season assuming that, oh, not only is he going to definitely be that guy again, he's going to build on it. He's going to be even better this year because that's all they do is they progress forward. Everybody progresses forward. And it's like, no, there are fits and spurts. You know, it is the old development is not linear thing, but it's at the big league level. And I think we've forgotten about that sometimes, that sometimes guys take steps back even at the big league level. And it's unfortunate. And I'm not trying to set up doom on these three guys. It is more likely than not that they will be effective pitchers throwing a lot of innings for the Cubs this year. But it is a reminder that you can't make that assumption about younger guys who haven't had sort of many, many years of track record to say, okay, cool, they are set in the big leagues in the way you might, you know, how much have we talked about Marcus Stroman this offseason or spring? Not at all. Because he's got a, you know, 10-year track record of being, you know, pretty darn solid. So anyway, that's where I'm with you, Mooney, is that we need to see that the Cubs not only have the ability of helping flip that switch for certain guys at the big league level, but that they have the ability to stabilize it over multiple years.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I think I completely agree that this is, I've looked at this year as, I want to see a little bit more as far as results with the pitchers. I think it's hard to deny that they're in a much better place than they were when we were covering this team 5 years ago with the pitching, right? But that doesn't mean all is well, and this is a powerhouse, and we can start talking about them in the same way as you talk about Cleveland and Tampa Bay and LA, right? That's where they want to get to, and I think they believe they can build that type of reputation. They're not there yet until we start. This is a big year for the minors and the majors. You want to, what you were just touching on, as far as you want to see some consistency, you want to see, is Justin Steele right now? Is he his best self? No. Does that mean he's going to start the season in the minors? Absolutely not. He's a part of this rotation. They believe in him. And I'm going to write a little bit about this soon, but essentially he may not be throwing 94, 95 come the start of the season. And we've seen this from other pitchers and they've had perfectly fine seasons, right? They eventually find that velocity. He may not find that peak velocity by until May or June or whatever, but he needs to learn how to pitch with maybe not his elite best stuff, right? He's still the type of pitcher that has the type of stuff that should be able to get outs and work five or six innings and keep his team in the game. And sometimes that's just the reality of being a major league pitcher. Like, you need to learn how to deal with that. It's not always going to be the best stuff. David Ross has talked about this for years. He gets really frustrated with these guys that think, oh, you know, they work in the pitch lab and they go see all the numbers and like, yep, that's how it's always going to be. The nasty spin rate and the velo in the upper 90s. And that's not how it's always going to be. You're going to be feeling off someday and your name's going to be called and it's your day. It's your fifth day to go. And you got to go pitch and you got to figure out a way to make it work. John Lester didn't feel great for all whatever 200 innings that he threw every season. The best of the best aren't always in the best, feeling the best, but they find a way to make it work. They're going to have bad days. They're going to have great days, but you need to find a way to keep your team in the game. I think Justin's starting to understand that. Justin Steele's starting to understand that. And I think we're going to have to see that in April. He may be sitting 92 or 93. You want to see him tick up a little bit more. I think the last start was a little weird. He said he was just off all day. So let's take him at his word for now. Let's see where he is velocity-wise next start. He really can't, even if he is sitting low velocity, he can't be walking five guys, right? That's the bigger concern than the velocity, because I think the velocity will come, and I think it's just a build-up thing for him. Keegan, it's clearly a mechanical issue and maybe a strength issue. He needs to go get right again. And I think unless he looks good today, I think that may be someone that we see sent down. I agree with Patrick that with Hughes, they're going to try and have him pitch this weekend, try and avoid an IL stint. I think he's probably not on the team to start the season. Like a great excuse to make here. Not that he isn't bothered by this knee, not that that isn't the reason, but I think it makes a lot of sense to just say, okay, this is bugging you. You don't look right. You're supposed to be one of our high leverage arms. There's no way Ross is going to trust him in the eighth inning the way he's looked. He hasn't looked good. And that's the same with Keegan. Keegan's been getting outs. And when I saw him back at home, when I was watching an outing, I didn't have the radar gun wasn't up, right? And he was getting outs. I was like, oh, Keegan looks like himself. And then I come into camp and I hear like, Keegan's sitting 91. I don't know. This seems off. And it's like, oh, he is? We weren't seeing velocity readings back home watching on Marquee. So yes, I think we'll see what happens with Keegan. But that is something where I'm like, heh, you got to get right. You got to get those mechanics right. But I will say this. Like you said, we're not talking about Marcus Stroman because he looked great in the WBC and he's going to look great, you know, I'm sure when he pitches again here. And I think he's going to be fine. Jameson Taillon looked great the other night. You know, nobody was paying attention because it was Shohei Ohtani versus Mike Trout in the WBC. But Taillon looked great. Yeah, it's spring training again, but the stuff looks good. The velocity is where it needs to be. I don't know if he'll miss that many bats. But this team's not going to walk anyone. I was talking to some players about this and some guys that weren't on the team. In 2018, do you guys remember the start of 2018? Do you remember watching Yu Darvish and Tyler Chatwood and hating life? some of the worst pitched baseball I've ever watched. And why was that? Because both of those guys were walking every other batter. It was
well, and Jose Quintana, his walk rate spiked. That, if I remember correctly, that was when his walk rate spiked too.
It was miserable. It was miserable. I talked to some guys that hadn't been on the team, and they were like, "Oh, I remember that." Like they remember how bad it was. Like 4+ hour games because Darvish couldn't find the strike zone. Tyler Chatwood never found the strike zone with the Cubs, and like it's going to be the opposite this year. That they have strike throwers, and they're going to throw a lot of strikes now. Does that mean they're going to have a great rotation? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. They're not going to miss a ton of bats, but between Taillon, and Stroman, and then Wisniewski looks great, obviously, and Smiley really turned a corner. Kind of, I think he's one of those veterans that you can say like kind of dismiss early on. He's trying to figure some things out, get his body right, build himself up. And his last two outings, he's looked like himself, right? I think he threw the day or two before I arrived, and then he threw yesterday in a minor league game and just was, you know, it's a minor league game, but still just didn't give up anything and just looked good and was getting his work in. That's four guys that you feel pretty good with going into the season. So great. I'm not saying that like all is well. I'm just saying there's some good stuff going on. There's some red flags already popping up. And I want to see more this year. I said this on a Fangraphs podcast recently, previewing the Cubs season. But I think this is a year where I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued by what you're doing with your pitching. You have my attention on this. Now continue to build on that. Like, I want to see Justin Steele repeat that performance that we saw for a few months there. I want to see a couple more guys come up to the big leagues and impact this team, whether it's Jeremiah Estrada or another surprise guy that we weren't talking about Brandon Hughes a year ago, right? I want to see Jordan Wicks and Ben Brown and these guys dominate at Double A or look really good at Double A. All these other names, you know, we can go down the list. And like I've said before, we weren't able to do that 3-4 years ago, go down the list at all. It was like one or two names. And then like, I don't know. So it's good. There's good news, but it's also like, show me, prove it to me. Take that next step. Show that you are this great pitching development organization. Like you're kind of like they believe they are on the verge of that. Okay, now prove it. Now let's see it. Continue to take those steps forward and just be this team that's continually producing pitching to where when these red flags with Keegan Thompson and Justin Steele pop up, you're not worried because you have Javier Assad to step into Keegan Thompson's role and Justin Steele is a smart enough and good enough and well-developed enough pitcher that he can kind of work through the Kinks early in April and May and get to a point in June where he's mowing guys down again.
I mean, we've all talked about this probably since last April when the season collapsed, of the idea that like starting pitching can cover up a lot of mistakes and just make everything better. But I do think the rhetoric is a huge part of the story here. And Brett, you made a great point of like, you know, fans mentally kind of just said, you know, Keegan in, Steele, rotation. Oh, Brandon Hughes, he's our lefty. And like, that comes from the top of the organization. That's Tom Ricketts saying, you know, we've got things figured out on the pitching side. It's the personnel choices that Jed Hoyer's front office makes. It's Jed sitting in the interview room saying, you know, I'd love to have an entirely homegrown bullpen. And it's, you know, Marquee in the score highlighting all these Cubs coaches. And it's like the sweeper mania. Like the Cubs have, you know, very publicly said, we have things figured out over and over again, in spite of 90 lost seasons. And we all look at this team exhaustively. We always try to put ourselves in their shoes and try to see what they see and see their point of view. And I think they would largely agree with a lot of this pushback kind of that we're talking about here. They're not blind to it. I mean, David Ross was a catcher on two World Series winning teams. I mean, Jed Hoyer was at Curt Schilling's house for Thanksgiving. Like, these people know what great pitch. I mean, Tommy Hotovy, the run prevention coordinator for like the greatest defensive team ever, maybe. Like, they all know what the standard is, and they know they're not there yet. It's just that there's been a lot of public messaging about, you know, kind of what we're doing on the pitching side is super interesting. Like, just give us some time. And like, it, you know, starting next week, we're gonna have to see it, and they're gonna have to keep, you know, backfilling and getting creative and, you know, dealing with, you know, the stuff that always pops up in every season. Like, things go wrong, and let's see how the Cubs adjust to it.
In conclusion, it's also why so much fixation on the quote fifth starter job in the rotation was always a bit silly, because, you know, injuries happen, yeah, but also you just end up having to reshuffle guys in multiple roles, because it's just like when you actually get into the thick of it, it's like, I'm not sure this is the best way to deploy certain pitchers to, you know, help us over the next few weeks. And so we're going to have this guy doing this. And I was thinking about that recently because of the reframing of with Javier Assad and how quickly it sort of became, it went from, you know, well, he's obviously in that fifth starter mix, and he's obviously like the depth starter, obviously. And then like, bam, within 2 days, it was, no. He's obviously in the bullpen. I mean, he's obviously going to be a multi-inning guy in the bullpen. And, it makes the idea of, and I'm not suggesting this, I'm just saying nobody's talking about, well, what if Hayden Wesneski was in the bullpen? What if he got in? That seems crazy now, but then what if this happens and this happens and this happens? You realize, oh, you know what? That is the best way to orchestrate the guys right now. And so I think, just to sum up this conversation about the pitching, and it speaks to what the Cubs have done developmentally. It also speaks to the arms they have available now. It also speaks to prospects coming up. It's just really hard to predict. And it is easy in the off season, because there aren't games happening every day, it's easy to think that things are set. You know, this guy is this thing, this guy is this thing, and they're going to be in these roles. And when the rubber meets the road in the season, all of this changes rapidly. It just really does. And so we'll obviously talk about that throughout the season here on the podcast, but it's also just a comment, I suppose, for fans, and I include myself in that mix, that got to be flexible in your thinking, and the Cubs will have to be flexible in their thinking too. And I want to not forget to mention, so the Cubs, a lot of cuts today. Finally, they still have 41 in camp, so there's still 15 to cut down. And I think a lot of the stuff that we're talking about now is going to aid in that, because there are probably some guys who are, quote, big league roster guys who are going to either start behind or hit the injured list or what have you. But we saw a number of quality depth pieces finally head out. I think I actually was encouraged in looking at a list of some of the cuts today, you know, with a Cam Sanders and a Nelson Velasquez, and just guys that I'm like, you know, I can see them contributing this year. And they aren't even in the last round of cuts. They're in the second to last or third to last round of cuts. And that's nice. That's nice to see. I think that speaks to there being a little more depth than we were used to seeing. So you guys can drop a thought on that. But I also want to make sure we don't forget to mention what you wrote about this week, Sahadev, which was the potential that Seiya Suzuki returns a little sooner than maybe we were fearing or hoping. So take any of those threads and jump on it, guys, and then we'll wrap.
Yeah, well, I think Patrick touched on this before about how quickly things kind of change. And I know I left camp the day that Seiya got hurt. And it was kind of... It's one of those things that's the injury that, unless it's super minor, immediately you find out it's just like a nothing thing that's just like, you know, don't do anything for 2 weeks and you'll be able to play again. That you wonder, oh, geez, is this going to be 6 weeks, 8 weeks, longer, if something weird happens? I really think missing the first month of the season was on the table initially. And it's not even like really a thought anymore from the people that I talked to. And this was before he went through everything this past week, where he's gone through a ton. He's done a ton of stuff. We watched him throw that medicine ball around. And I know you think, like, just hearing that, I think, doesn't do justice to the visual of him throwing the medicine ball around, which is, you know, a big, like, not one of these small ones, like a basketball size, but a foot or two in diameter.
And he was throwing that thing like the length of two football fields. He was just through the uprights, just, not oh, exactly. God, just chucking.
He was like the Mendelbaums from that Seinfeld episode, just right. Carrying it around everywhere.
Essentially. But
doing front flips, yeah. I saw. I saw he incorporated front flips into his routine. So, man, this guy is fit.
Yeah, no, but I mean, he's aggressively throwing that against the wall of the ground, and obviously, if you're feeling anything there, you're not able to do that. You're just not. So, like, he must not be feeling it at all. He took dry swings, I believe, as Ross called it, and now he's taking BP in the cage, regular BP in the cage. And he's coming out of everything feeling great. He's running. He's throwing. He's doing it all, right? He ran the bases yesterday. It seems like he's doing really well. I think now the target is, if he misses 2 weeks, great. If he misses, if he's on the minimum, a minimum DL stint, IL stint, which I believe the way it works is, it's always tricky at the start of the season, and I always have to remind myself, but I believe at the start of the season you can still backdate 3 days. So that would mean
3 days.
So that would mean 7 days.
As long
days,
as you didn't.
Yeah. As long as you didn't.
As long
play.
As you didn't appear in a Cactus League game.
Right. Yeah. Which
is what it used to be, at least. That's what it always used to be.
Right. So I think that's all the more reason why he won't appear in a Cactus League game. You can backdate that 3 days. And I mean, he could be close to coming back 7 days into the season. Like, if it's a minimum stint that's 7 days in the season, that means the weekend they get back from Cincinnati. So two series. I don't – like, was anybody considering that initially? It seemed like that was just like a pipe dream initially. I think that's the optimistic scenario, which, you know, setbacks happen. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. But he's done a ton so far. And there hasn't been anything to suggest that he needs to slow down. It's good news. I think that's something that you can point to as they avoided something pretty bad here. That they need him, right? If this season is going to be better than people kind of expect, part of the reason is going to be Kaseya Suzuki stepped his game up and became this middle of the order bat, right? He's a big part of this team's success in 2023 and beyond. So missing a week compared to a month feels significant to me, especially when you're looking at a team that kind of maybe more mentally than anything needs to get off to a solid start and not fall apart at the beginning to kind of like keep everyone engaged. Both outside and within the clubhouse, and keep them believing that, hey, we got something here. Let's go and surprise some people.
Yeah, Sahadev, you did a great job staying on top of that, because roughly 2 weeks after Seiya was initially injured, there was this buzz like, we're looking at mid-April. And to be honest, I just didn't believe it, looking at Seiya's history, how conservative the Cubs typically are with these injuries, and just how tricky these oblique issues are typically. And then how quickly things change. You know, right around the time I was leaving Arizona, Seiya had just begun like playing catch, which did not sound like much, but clearly he's ramped up this past week. And, you know, we were talking about the depth earlier. That's interesting. That's great. You need it, but you also need stars. And to me, if I were the Cubs or a Cubs fan, I thought this World Baseball Classic was just such a jarring, like how far they've fallen outside of like the international baseball conversation. Like if you're a Cubs fan watching Kyle Schwarber's epic at-bat versus Yu Darvish, like the COVID cost-cutting casualties of what was a division-winning team. And then you see them holding up Seiya's jersey. Like, are you kidding me? Like, the last World Baseball Classic was Javi Baez becoming this, like, global phenomenon and everything he was doing with Team Puerto Rico. And I thought just to see that jersey and, you know, people being like, oh, maybe let's recruit Otani. Like, I don't know. The big star was Lars Nootbaar, from what I was told. Like, I was told, you know, one of our colleagues in the Japanese media is like, yeah, we're going to be like, St. Louis is going to be a big story because of Lars. So maybe he'll recruit Otani to do like a reverse Pujols to St. Louis. But I mean, good news on the Seiya front, because we've been talking about this from the moment, even before he got injured. Like, you need best case scenarios, you need guys to just really pop. And that's why they paid Seiya. And he has, you know, the track record, the profile, like the potential to do all those things as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, the Cubs need a lot of best case scenarios. And the best case scenario for someone like him is considerably more impactful than the best case scenario for some of the depth, for example. And so, yeah, he does carry an outsized impact, and therefore the difference in him returning in a week versus a month is, I think, I don't think we overstate it when we hang on that as a really meaningful difference. And I would add too, you know, it isn't just the games he misses. It's there's something about it feels like then he's not as far away from doing the same baseball activities that everyone else was doing to ramp up for the season. You know, for a guy who didn't quite get a normal spring training last year and who was maybe on a bit of an accelerated ramp up this year because he was going to be playing in the WBC, for him then to miss 8 weeks or whatever and be sort of really down in rest mode and not even doing anything and then trying to come back and then ramp up in minor league games, and it feels like the odds of it lingering in sort of slowing him down in the regular season are slightly reduced if he's back a little sooner than if he had to be kind of all just in total rest mode for a while. So
also,
yeah, it's been pretty encouraging.
One thing roster wise that I find interesting now, because this may be shorter than expected, I do wonder if that means you don't bring Mike Tauchman in and take that 40-man roster spot up, especially considering Brandon Hughes is hurt and you may need that 40-man spot for Mark Leiter. There are a lot of moves here that I'm starting to wonder if things are changing as far as, like, this really is a day-to-day thing with the roster. Like, these final few spots on the roster, it's going to be interesting. They have decisions to make. They have guys they don't want to lose, but I think they kind of understand they can't keep everyone, especially on the pitching side. There are guys like Leiter and Duffy and maybe one other arm that I'm forgetting off the top of my head who they're not on the 40-man right now, and they'd like to put them on, but they just won't be able to because there's guys that they want to keep at the back end of that 40-man roster. It's going to be interesting. There's a couple, and like a guy like Amaya and a guy like Tenorio that are on the 40-man that you can't put on the 60-day because that complicates things. Those are some maneuverings that kind of guys that are far away, like Ben Brown, he's on the 40-man, right? He's not going to be impacting this team, at least not in the first few months. It would be a shock if he did. A lot of guys on the 40-man that aren't part of this that are kind of cluttering up the 40-man almost. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Because you need those arms. You need that depth. You can call it a good situation in one degree, but it's also like you got to make the right decision then too, right? You have to nail it. You don't want to give up. You don't want to lose a reliever that a contender picks up and is able to stash, and then they call him up in June, and that guy's nasty out of the bullpen, right? That's always frustrating to see. It happens. Liam Hendricks was in camp with the Cubs once. Couple other guys, there's, you look around the league, they've been in camp with the Cubs, or you know, they've been dropped all over. That's typical of relievers, but it's just one of those things that I'm going to be keeping my eye on the next few days. I'm really curious to see how they fill out the rest of this roster.
All right. Yeah. No, I'm, yeah. he's done. Yeah, no, that's good. That's a good place to leave it. And I do think that it's all the more reason why we'll see a lot of these edge decisions on the roster go deep into next week. Cause what if you make a decision and then it's like, boom, the next day a guy steps on a baseball and rolls his ankle. And so there's no point in making some of these decisions any earlier than is necessary. All right. To that end, we'll be back at you next week. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you as always. Hope you enjoy this last week of spring training. And, have a nice weekend. We will try to do the same. Take care.